Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Voxology Podcast. If you're new, Voxology, Vox is means voice in Latin because it's awesome. And ology is the study of something, so the study of voices. And we kind of zero in on the voice of Jesus. We're kind of fans. And it sounds cool, and it makes for good merch. So Voxology Podcast, Mike and Tim, we're going on year 9 of this here, high quality podcast. Started when we were 10, which is amazing. And today's a big day, guys. We're recording on Friday, April 19th. We record on Fridays, release episodes on Mondays. It's a tight ship. But today is the music equivalent of the movie cultural event of Barbenheimer, where Barbie and Oppenheimer were released on the same day last summer. Today, Taylor Swift and the venerable rockers Pearl Jam have both released albums. Taylor's was unexpected. It's a double album, some sort of anthology of torturedness. Pearl Jam.
Same.
Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Yes. So choose your flavor. Which one of those is Barbie and which one of those is Oppenheimer? You be the
That's
decider.
Kind of funny, actually, if you think about it, because the Pearl Jam album is called Dark Matter and is dealing with all this kind of like fusion, like,
yes.
So it is kind of like the Barbenheimer. They're anthologies. Well, actually. They're
anthologies of torture. Absolutely. Tim Stafford went and to an album release party in a movie theater where you got to listen through the album twice, once in the dark.
Yep.
Which is odd. And then once with a visualizer and lyrics.
Yeah. It wasn't the best experience. It wasn't. I remember the Chili Peppers for 2 or 3 records ago, they did a theater thing also, but they actually performed live. And then you watch it in the theater. So they just played the album straight through live. And that was kind of cool.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that seems a little better.
Yeah, this was a little weird, but whatever. Yeah, big day in our house. Big Taylor Swift fans over here. Big Pearl Jam fans.
I mean, Pearl Jam fans or fan?
Great question.
We're Shauna on this.
Okay. She's related, so I don't think it's never been that big of a deal for her.
Yeah. There was one of the perks of being a, big time pastor back in the day is that there would be people who would just send you things out of, I don't know, just connection and joy and whatever else. And so there was one day I walk into my little office and there are about 5 or 6 CDs, which were full of Pearl Jam outtakes and B-sides like rehearsal, like tapes. I mean, this stuff was the most obscure stuff. And it's so hard to find. And so I just upload all of this onto my computer. And I'm loving it. And it wasn't until, when was it? Like 2 or 3 years ago that you said it was you. It was you who sent me all of that.
Yep.
So thank you.
There's only certain ways I can show affection. That's one of them.
Yes.
Our friend Matt Miller used to say that my spiritual gift was making mixtapes.
Yeah, I could see that. Because this
pre-digital
era. Stuff, yeah, this stuff was so obscure. Like literally, here's the first draft of Evenflow. Ever. I mean, it's like, what? So anyway, just kudos to my friend, Tim.
Yeah.
And, as a token of my appreciation, I'm going to compliment your face. It is
exactly what I want.
Yes. It's great. Anyway, you said before we started that you had a big, big question. And this is not about
Huge.
Mark Driscoll and the stripper pole.
Oh, actually, it does relate to that.
Oh, okay.
But not about that part in particular. Okay. But now that you brought that up, I'm sure if anyone's on Twitter at all, they saw all the kerfuffle over, what is it called? The Stronger Men's Conference?
No idea.
Which is just great from the get-go. They roll a tank out on stage and they have like, it's just a whole like, it's like watching Idiocracy. I don't know. It looks like an SNL skit. This is what Christian, I don't know. Anyway, they had a guy who used to be a stripper and he was doing like a sword swallowing thing. I don't,
okay.
I, I watched the pastor of the church, his rebuke of Driscoll and stuff, his sermon that was rebuking Driscoll and stuff yesterday. It was interesting.
Okay.
Anyway,
I'm glad you exist.
I was telling you before we did this that I am on a closed Facebook group for Pearl Jam fans. And it's just like such a weird, like angry, bitter group of people that all try to tell each other what is good Pearl Jam, what's not good Pearl Jam. Mm. And if you don't fit
into like a church.
Exactly. So if you don't fit into like a certain thing, you just get kind of chastised and ripped apart by other. It's so toxic and strange. Yeah. And so I was just like, man, who gets to define really what it means to be a Pearl Jam fan or what a good Pearl Jam song is? Because so many people are just angry that they're not 25 and making their first two records anymore, as they're all in their 60s or approaching 60 now. So it's just kind of ludicrous by design. But then I was watching the stuff with Driscoll and this other guy, and I was like, man, and it's not just that, it's all Christianity on in the social sphere is all gatekeeping. This is what it means to be a Christian. You're out. Mm-hmm. And so it's who gets to define it and why and by what standards and scruples? Because I know we've talked about how our faith has splintered.
Yeah.
However many hundreds of times over the history of, like my therapist was asking me something about Calvinism when we were in therapy the other day. And it's just like, started thinking about how many different versions of Christianity there have been. Mm. And if you don't fit certain molds or at least check a couple of certain boxes, you're often chastised or ostracized from the group.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, it's really, so I started thinking about if you haven't listened to the podcast for a while, we did a big long thing that I think had some traction with people about being center set focused and a boundary. Mm-hmm. So if you're a part of a church that builds certain boundaries that keep some people out and keep other people in versus,
yeah,
you even had a version of it before the center set that was like the well, it was like
well and fences, baby.
Well and fences.
Yeah.
And I just started thinking about that within all of this context about how much we try to define who is and who isn't. Cause man, this people on Twitter are like, you are a heretic. You are a heretic. You are, or Driscoll's thing is like the Jezebel spirit. That was his, it was so ludicrous. Cause he went off on this thing. And then I sent it to somebody just like, what is he up to? And it was that day he talked about a book he was releasing that was dealing with like the Jezebel something or just like, there it is. He just got the best publication or like, you know, publicity for his.
Well, he's never been dumb in that way.
Nope, he's good at that.
Yeah.
But the idea of gatekeeping, even as we're talking about what it means to be human and like this, what is this invitation that we're being offered into full humanity or I don't know. And then maybe this question is now getting much bigger because now it has to do with salvific ideas.
This is what you do.
I'm spinning.
This is the beauty of Tim Stafford right here.
We were talking about how I have a really dry sense of humor that, and so people often don't know when I'm joking. Mm. And Sean and I listened to a lot of Smartless and how that's Jason Bateman. They had Larry David on last week and he made a joke and no one could tell if he was joking or not. Bateman.
Oh, I love that.
And I was like, am I Jason Bateman?
Yeah. I mean,
long-winded questions and dry sense of humor that most people don't know if it's a joke or not.
I don't think you come across nearly as self-absorbed, which I mean,
well, I hope not.
And that's part of his, and that's part of his shtick too. But yes. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So the question or the topic you want to talk about
gatekeeping or
is gatekeeping around.
Not around Pearl Jam, but that was an example of that. But just in the church in general, like,
yeah,
as we're setting up this thing about being human and the center set stuff,
yeah,
I want to find ways of encouraging people around,
yeah,
how we exist amongst other Christians. Mm. So we get tons of emails like, is there a church in my area that falls into X, Y, and Z? We get those questions on Facebook also. Everyone's looking for a group of people they can feel like-minded and comfortable with. And in some ways that's, I'm sure, great. In other ways it's not.
Yeah.
So what does that look like as people are, cause I feel like our podcast has held a position for people who have deconstructed, to use that term, and are now looking to rebuild on, you know, we just had like three emails this morning that were like, thank you for giving me the words for this or helping me to let go of this thing and embrace a fuller blah, blah, blah. Which is wonderful. I feel like that's a great a great kudos email. But how do we help encourage people more in that, where we're not teaching them to build up new walls?
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Boy, there are about 8,000 different topics. I mean, this is our project together, yeah. Right? Because one of the things we've talked about a lot is, it's not just, the issue isn't having convictions, or it's how those are held and how they're expressed. Are they held and expressed in ways that promote humility and curiosity and conversation and listening and hospitality? Or are they held and promoted in ways that shut all of that down, you know, and lead to the boundary keeping? And obviously boundaries aren't necessarily bad things. Every group will have them. It's just how they're used. Right. And so when boundaries in religious terms are used to shame and guilt, and they play on fear, they're used to exclude, then they become, you know, they become the enemies, or the an expression of the powers even within the church. Right.
Yeah.
And so that whole center set conversation was great, because Jesus, of course, walks around with some significant clarity as to who he is and what he's looking for. You know, repent, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. But yet the way he embodied, taught, and invited people into that opened up. I mean, all of Jesus, the entire ministry of Jesus, was designed to make God more accessible and the knowledge of God more available to greater and greater numbers of people. And because there was so much confusion around him, he would often act in like parables, which, you know, separated the those that were proud from those that were really listening, or he would engage in prophetic acts that seemed at odds with the cultural expectations of Messiah. But by and large, what Jesus was doing and what his opponents accused him of is making, you know, the kingdom wide open for any, regardless of social standing or prior religious commitment, to enter in. So part of what gatekeeping, and the beautiful thing about gatekeeping, is it provides clarity, right? That's the great gift. And for those inside, it provides security.
Right.
Right. And so that has been the temptation. I mean, from the word go, the minute there was a people of God, it's been the temptation. Well, who's the true Israel, right? We have Israel, but who are the true ones? And part of what the Pharisee answer was back in the day was, hey, we're the true Israel. And the reason we know that is because we see that there's this authoritative tradition that comes from Moses that's not the Torah, that's called the oral Torah, or our written traditions. And that gives us clarity in what it means to be actually pure. You know, when the scripture says, hey, keep the Sabbath holy, don't work on it, our tradition says there are 39 different categories of what constitutes working, right? And all of that gets deployed so that we can tell who true Israel is from who's not true Israel, right?
Yeah.
And so, man, that has been, I mean, look at the earliest church conflicts. That was exactly what was at issue. You've got to be Jewish before you accept and receive and follow the Jewish Messiah. And here's Paul, the Jewish of all of them, more Jewish of all of them, saying, nope, you don't have to. So it's a universal temptation. What's interesting about Jesus is that Jesus, the way he gate kept, was on a much different basis. It seems, and he repeats this, and then the scriptures repeat this about him, that he gives grace to the humble and he opposes the proud. And so those who came in with self-righteousness, whether it was through knowledge or riches, some sense of superiority, those people found Jesus difficult. The people that came in from low social standing, from no religious expertise, those who were, in his words, meek or poor or peacemaking, those people found him to be everything and more that they could have ever hoped Messiah to have been. Does that make sense?
Totally.
So Jesus gatekept too, but it was interesting. It wasn't so much a doctrinal gatekeeping or a behavioral gatekeeping. it was almost a self-estimation, a gatekeeping. You know what
I mean?
Assume,
like, yeah. Well, you would assume that that posture doesn't have you center focused anyways. Right. So
yes, yes.
I just think it's, but I guess what I get nervous about, and so I'll just use myself as the example, but I see this a lot where it's like, we hate the boundaries that the church is building and who it's keeping out, And so we go and build new ones, you know what I mean?
It's right.
Like, so it's like, how do we continue to posture ourselves like that, where we're not being proud in a new way? Like, I've been working really hard on, like, this season is a season of where I'm trying to really live into the love your enemies and not have prejudices and all this kind of stuff. And it's, when I was thinking about all this debacle with Driscoll and, or if I'm watching anything going on politically, it's like, it can be a challenge to really try to have compassion for your enemies and to not let, like, to feel the poison of kind of hate or vitriol or disgust or whatever kind of percolate in your system to actually, like, you know, not support things that are wrong, but not to hate and to try to ostracize and to be invitational and to try to be conversational with people that you just would previously in life have loathed. It's a really hard practice, but when you see the stuff that's going on in the world, in the church or in politics, you're just like, you, the love your enemy, just, I feel like it's like on a loudspeaker. Like, it's just like, hey, take a breath.
Yeah.
Slow down. This can still be constructive in a, and without it being combative or whatever. And I really just see that kind of being played out, or not being played out, but the necessity of it everywhere right now. So it relates to the gatekeeping, but I just, like, we just compartmentalize and push out anyone we can, instead of just being like you said, the kingdom is wide open. How can we share that, show that, and live it and invite into it and blah, blah, blah. So,
And there is a discernment, right? We've talked a lot about this. There's a healthy discernment where we discern between ways of living and acting or speaking that are aligned with the kingdom or not.
But even that can be invitational.
Absolutely. But but the condemning judgment of others into sheep, goats, you know, lost, saved.
I see myself doing it every day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love drawing boundaries around the boundary drawers.
Right. Totally.
And that's the killer, right? I mean, that's the Pharisee trap is, you know, when the Pharisee stands before God at the temple and says, I thank you that I'm not like them. who's the them for me?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I thank you that I'm not a Pharisee. That's what I want to say. And then I just, you know, join them in becoming. Yeah. That's why the log and spec thing is so critical to like this sort of practice, that whatever I've received from Jesus, I'm passing on. So I've received belonging before I actually had it all together. I received grace. That was grace, not just one time at the beginning when I was saved, but grace that has led me, and kindness that has led me into repentance. You know what I mean? Like, and so.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly that. Repentance, not out of fear.
No.
But out of grace and which are so different.
So different. So different. We're going to actually talk. So we're going to talk today. We're going to see, you're just so genius. You don't even know it.
Well, I just found preparing for Easter, I was very convicted on this stuff again, like by just my own study, like looking through things and just being like, it's like you get fed up with the boundaries that the church makes, and you want everybody to experience and be part and see and hear. And then, but then I want to build up the walls to keep out the people that were building the first walls because they make it uncomfortable for other people that are.
And there is, I mean, I don't want to rule that out entirely.
But I think it's how and why you do it.
Yes, yes, yes. That's the killer point, because I do think, I mean, there are people who are not comfortable in our church because we're comfortable with other people being
totally
there.
Totally. But you still want them to be there.
Yeah. I mean, you'd want around a family dinner, right? You'd want the weird aunts and the, you know, the crazy nephews and the, I mean, you'd want all of that there. That's the idea. So yeah, I mean, I can't watch that sort of the you know episode you were describing, because it just fosters in me, because I do want to warn people away from that version of Jesus following for sure. But whereas Jesus could call out people with, you know, with like holy righteousness, I don't always feel, you know, as good doing that. But yeah, dude, that's so good. When we talk about this week and next week, we're going to talk about power. And there's a way of holding convictions that is invitational and promotes curiosity and humility. And there's a way of holding convictions that shuts all of that down.
Nice.
And that's, so the issue isn't, hey, I mean, there are all sorts of things I believe and I wish other people would believe them.
Yeah.
But evangelism can be a power over move.
100%.
100%. Preaching can, worship can, church leadership can. So what we're talking about isn't necessarily having convictions, because it's not like you deconstruct convictions and then you just don't have any more convictions ever.
Yeah.
But we're part of what we're deconstructing is holding convictions a certain way and insisting that they be honored, valued, and respected, you know, in our direction while we don't provide that reciprocally. Yeah. You know, or yeah, reciprocally, mutually, whatever. Whatever words I was using there. So let's dive into Genesis, bro. Great job. Great job. On T Swift, on the day of T Swift's launch, here's our anthology of torturedness.
By the end of this episode, my brain's just trying to put together Taylor Swift and Pearl Jam into a Barbenheimer kind of amalgam.
Yes. Paler Jam. Paler Gift. Then God said, let us make humanity in our image, in our likeness, so they may rule over the fish of the sea, the birds of the sky, livestock, all the wild animals, over all the creatures that move along the ground. So then we get a poetic interlude. So God created humanity in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. God blessed them, said, be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth, which that's actually a command given to other beings, and subdue it. And then the command to rule is repeated, rule over the fish of the sea, the birds of the sky. And the word rule here is literally the word to have dominion over, to dominate something. And so, and I don't mean to be tedious in unpacking what rule means, but last episode, or the episode before Gambas, we had to talk about why would the humans be called to have dominion over something? And the answer is because it was created good, not perfect. It was loaded with potential, and that potential was going to come bursting forth, but it could either be taken in directions that were God-honoring and promoted the flourishing of everyone, or in directions that, you know, imaged the snake and were only honoring for a few. And so what it meant to be an image bearer, not... The noun is who we are. We are images. The verb, we can image many things. I can image the serpent into the world. I can image the American dream into the world. I can image the insults from my parents into the world, right? We can image the love and the heart of Jesus into the world. So what we're talking about now is the way image gets played out is through ruling and having dominion over. Obviously, the Bible is full of utter cautionary tales of the misuse of power all over the place. And this word rule and subdue, they've been employed to justify, you know, whether it's environmental practices or whether that's in marriage relationships or whatever. They've been, there's a view of power sitting behind the word rule and the word subdue that I think is very confusing for people.
Yeah.
Because we think power is just something that is and can either be used for good or bad. But there's a lot of scholarship, particularly recently, arguing that there's actually two kinds of power. that are at work in the world. And we want to explore this over the next couple of episodes. All right. So back to the text. To be created in the image means that we are a noun and that we verb image, right? So we image things. N.T. Wright has this beautiful picture of what it is to image something. It's like we're a mirror that's refracted. You know, it's like we're pointed up, the sun hits us and then gets reflected into the creation. It's kind of like God's glory, God's love, God's creational purposes are reflected through the human to creation. And then creation's needs and praise and whatever gets reflected off the human back up to God. That's kind of the idea. And I always thought that was a really, really good picture. And the word rule presupposes ongoing activity. So it's not a one-time, it assumes, and this is where it ties into the word good, it assumes that this is an unfinished, never completed task that is ongoing for human beings, because it's not like creation slows down. Right. You know, anyone who's got grass in the Midwest right now, that stuff is growing. You know, and it's not like it's not going to. So the invitation to rule isn't a one-time ruling. It is a continual subduing and filling and ruling that we're talking about here. So the world is good and ordered. It is full of potential, and we are invited to direct it. And the directing of it is the word rule. Now, the very key part of this, and this is the part you've brought up before, is the ruling of the human is modeled after and based on the ruling of God. And this is where we begin the idea that there are two definitions of power at work in the world. Because we can look at God and say, yeah, he just speaks the world into existence. He just has this sort of divine fiat command voice and things happen. But it's actually a little more sophisticated picture of the kind of power that God's exerting in doing this. So our rulership over creation is to model God's rulership over creation. And so it becomes important in Genesis how it is that God has created, how it is that God rests, how it is that God exercises power. So there's a guy named David Fitch, F-I-T-C-H, related to Miles Finch from Elf, and he's got a so dumb and he's got a book out called Reckoning with Power, and it was okay, but by the end of it, man, that guy was sizzling. And it's a short read, and one of the key points he makes, and we're going to explore this more next episode, is that there are two forms of power at work in the world. It's not like there's just power that can be used for good or bad. But there are actually two different kinds of power in the world. One, he calls power over. Power over can be expressed in a thousand ways. Most brutally, it's expressed in military force or physical violence. It's literally power is the ability I have to get something done despite resistance. And so power over is the power of coercion, the power of violence, but it can also be the power of complicity in social systems and social settings. It's like, you know, if you've ever been in a social situation where you don't want to stand out, there's a power at work there that's power over. It's the power of police officers. It's the power of the power of physicians can be an expression of power over, right? There's an expertise that physicians have or car mechanics. And we've all been in situations where someone knew more than we did and we felt like we were taken advantage of. That's an expression of power over. So power over is the predominant standard account of what power is, that we do something that maybe we want to do or we don't want to do, but we do it because there's something over us, either compelling our action or wooing our compliance towards something. So that can be social pressure. That can be, I don't know. I mean, it's the reason we don't go out running around, you know, streaking, unless you're with Hank the Tank. there's social pressure there. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So power over is not just coercive power, but it can be power of institutional life. It can be power of tradition. This is the way we've always done it. It can be the power of expertise. I know something, you don't know something. And so you come to me and I tell you to do this.
Is it also when you think about like the Western powers, or you used military as an example, but people who have established themselves as a power, even without exerting force, but just having enough to say, hey, we're bigger than you. Yep. And so we just exist. It's privilege. Like a psychological power over.
Absolutely. Yeah. We would even call that privilege in some circles, right? Yeah. Where I'm not aware in certain social settings that being a tall, very handsome, white, heterosexual male, and four of those are true. I'll let you decide which one is it. that there's a power there that I'm not even aware of. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
I'm painful.
And so one of the interesting thing, we'll talk about this next episode. Fitch gets into the idea that a lot of people argue that we should be using privilege for to dismantle the idea of privilege. And he's like, that's yet another expression of power over. And so it's a really interesting take. We're going to explore it most. But for now, I want to look at the kind of power God is using. Mm-hmm. And so it looks like this is just power over. God says it, and then it happens. Fitch and others, Greg Boyd has done some great work on this too, has Andy Crouch, has Fitch talks about another kind of power, and he calls it power with. Boyd calls it power under. And it's the idea of mutual submission. It's the idea of reciprocity in relationships. It's the idea of confession and repentance. It's the idea of shared humility. It's power that is at work when one person, when two people are like butting heads and one person says that they are sorry first. There's something that's unleashed there. It's in a courtroom when the parents of a child that has been murdered forgive from the heart the offender who did this. That there's something there. It's the power when Jesus says, yeah, I could call down 72,000 angels, but I'm not gonna. You don't take my life, I give it. Like there's a power that's at work in the world there that's something real. And so I like the idea of power. I like actually both the idea of power over versus power under, or to use Fitch's term, power with. And this is what I see God employing here in Genesis 1. And there are a couple examples that I want to point to say, I think what God is doing is he's offering power with. And power with looks a certain way.
Yeah.
So power with is invitational. It's not coercive. And we talked just briefly in, I don't know, weeks ago, a podcast about the jussives. A jussive is when a command that's given in an invitational form. So if I were to say, let us feast, that's a jussive. Instead of, hey, slaves, bring the food out. A jussive is a command given with an invitation. So let there be light is a jussive. Let us make humanity in our image is a jussive. It's a way of expressing desire, but it's through invitation. Does that make sense? It's not as strong.
So let there be light with the non Jussive version of that be turn the lights on, or like what's
yes,
because it's more of a command than an invitation.
Right. Yep. Okay. The command would be perhaps something like,
"Hey, dingus, turn the lights on."
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, light
now.
Yeah, totally. Whereas the Jephthah of it, let there be light. And I know that seems like a very small, like, verbal difference, but it's actually like, there's a lot of hay that's made from the fact that the commands come this way. Let us make humanity in our
image. I mean, I think maybe it might feel to the four descriptions that you just gave of yourself about being hetero, white, male, tall, and beautifully handsome. To have, like, I would imagine that hearing this is harder for people like you and I than it is for others, where others who have been marginalized or subjugated or have been power overed, or you know what I mean, like, and which the, even though it feels like a slight difference, I imagine it sounds dramatically different to different demographics of people.
Yes And I mean, this is a point, though. Like, I don't want to, I know it sounds small, but it's not small.
Yeah.
It is an expression of the royal, like, the royal, you know, we. Hey, let the feast begin, or let the feasting commence, or whatever. Like, I mean, you could hear a British monarch saying that or something. So there is a bit of that. Like, this is a royal plural kind of at work here too. But I've read some Jewish scholars who just, you know, say that the kind of power that God is exercising here isn't the direct command power, but it's an invitational power that says to light that's now been created, come forth.
Mm.
You know, the plants come forth out of the ground. Do you know what I mean? There's a step there. It's just not a direct, like, speech act. There's something else happening.
Both of those are invitations into fullness too. Like, light, your full, your all, everything you can be.
Yes. Plants. Yep. The other thing we see about how God creates, or how God uses power, is that God uses his power to create other things with power.
Hmm.
So it's power with the humans.
It's empowered.
It's not power over them. Yeah. Yes. That's such a big deal.
Yeah.
Like dictators don't share power.
Right.
Because power over, I mean, that by necessity and definition, right? There has to be one or two at the top and many, but power with gives power away. It shares it. And so the image that we get of God in Genesis 1 is of, hey, isn't my house cool? Don't you want to come in and live? Like, right. Of a God who wants to share his house, you know, and a God who creates other things with power and influence in the world. I mean, plants have a certain form of power. And the humans, when they try to work over creation, as we'll see in Genesis 3 and following, creation doesn't participate.
Yeah.
But in the garden, they worked with creation.
Mm.
Does that make sense? And so the power of ruling isn't the power where we just command and things happen. It's the power of power distribution. It's power that gives away power. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It's power that cooperates with others who hold power. And so rule for the humans to rule like God already is being set up to look like invitation, to look like cooperation. You know, God creates something that's not him and invites those things into the world. I mean, that's like, I don't know, that's sort of a staggering creational, and not to subjugate them, but to share in enjoyment and to share in authority. I mean, that's just not the picture of any other ancient Near Eastern portrait. And not only that, but the objects of his command, his justice commands, are image bearers. Like, they have choice to disobey. Now maybe the light doesn't, or the plants don't, but the rulers above and the rulers below certainly have that.
Yeah.
And so it's a power that cooperates, but it's also a power that kind of gives away power and empowers. It's a power that humans are supposed to share between male and female, to share in plurality. One of the things we're going through in the church I'm a part of, we're teaching through the seven woes that Jesus gives the Pharisees and scribes of the law in Matthew 23. And one of the, I mean, he speaks like an Old Testament prophet most clearly in those woes as he's denouncing Israel's so-called religious leaders. And the fact that the Pharisees were so highly regarded makes this, you know, makes it like the gut punch of all gut punches. But one of the things that Jesus is saying to the community is, and it's fresh on my mind because we're going to be talking about it this weekend, is that the Pharisees love the seats of honor and to be greeted well in the marketplace.
Totally.
And they love to be first, and they expand their practices of piety to be bigger, you know? So their phylacteries, the little boxes that held the scriptures, you know, you were supposed to wear those at evening and morning prayer, but they would wear them all the time.
Right.
Or the tassels, they would make extra long tassels or whatever. And part of the point we're going to make to our community is, listen, you don't trust individuals, trust communities.
Yeah.
Right. So you can't, what do we do about Christian celebrities and pastors who are failing? Well, don't trust people. I mean, nobody, if we've learned anything, like don't trust individuals.
We're not built to move unilaterally, or maybe we are not equipped to move unilaterally or in a solo space.
Exactly. Yeah. But trust communities. And so we're going to be talking about mutuality, a community of mutuality, a community of plurality.
Yeah.
And this is this is power with. And so notice the rule command is given not just to the man and not just to the woman. Right, power over doesn't enter the picture until Genesis 3. Right, he says to the wife, your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you. And it's a different word, rule, that's used there. Mm. And so power over doesn't come in until 3. This is all power with. And power with is not hierarchical. It's male and female together, ruling, filling, subduing. Make sense?
Yeah, Bono has this quote about his wife where he talks about, like, I don't look up to her, I don't look down to her, I look across to her.
I love that. And the Jewish sages would often talk about how when it says that God took a rib from the man to make the woman, rib, the word that's used there in Hebrew is never used of an anatomical term. It's always used in architecture. It's the side of the tabernacle or part of the ark. Like, it's an architecture word. It's not a anatomy word. And so they talk about that the one Adam, the human, was split because the woman came from the side of the man. And and so it's exactly what Bono is saying. It's not, and they make this point. It's not, she didn't come from the head of the man so that she would run the show, or the feet of the man so that she would be under him.
Yeah.
From the side of the man so that they would walk together.
Yeah.
So power with is, I mean, you can already see the difference. It's power that empowers.
Yeah.
It's power that distributes authority. It's power in plurality. It's power that resists hierarchy. And this is what we're seeing in Genesis 1, when we're invited to rule, the model we're given for ruling, even if it were based on the Israelite monarchy, which some argue, even the Israelite monarchy had all sorts of strictures around it that were different from other ancient Near Eastern kings, so that the authority of the king was like proscribed by prophets and priests and Yahweh himself. I mean, the biggest point Fitch makes about power with is the only way to practice power with is if you see yourself as receiving power under something. So I know these are like, I'm not explaining it well, but the humans in Genesis only exist because of God's power, right? So they don't have power. Their power is derivative. So they are under God's power. And because they're under a greater power than them, they can practice power with. as opposed to people who think they're not under any other power,
right?
And they practice power over. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So being under, yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah. And so what we have, and I don't know, man, I hope this is making sense. What we have in Genesis is the invitation to rule, but it's ruling not as an expression of power over, but as an expression of power with.
Yeah.
And that expression is invitational, it empowers, blah, 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 blah. Once we hit Genesis 3, now we have power over, and then it's almost nothing but power over.
Forever.
Forever, right? It's like Cain murders his brother. And then Lamech in Genesis, 4 or 5, says, you know, yeah, Cain murdered, but I've murdered more, and I will, you know, and anyone who murders me will be avenged 77 times or whatever. And then you've got Noah, who in this weird way, there's this weird episode with Noah and drunkenness and some sort of sexual thing that happens. And then in Genesis 6, you have, you know, the sons of God taking the daughters of men, and the earth is filled with violence. And then Genesis 11, the humans have power now to make bricks. And so they do that to build a tower. I mean, it's just over and over and over. And that's why when we get to like complementarian readings of male-female relationships, one of the objections I have to the idea that men are to make all the decisions and women are to respond is that just seems to be a codification of the power differential in the fall, not at all what God's ideal was.
Yeah.
And that the power, even if men were heads of the house, let's say they are, what kind of power does God give them?
Yeah.
And it is power with. It is power to empower. It. Huh?
And how have they used it?
Yeah, well, I mean, yes. But I mean, even if you buy that man is head of the wife, the way Christ is head of the church, and then the description is, and Jesus gave himself up for her.
Yeah, totally.
Right? So it's power with, it's not power over ever. So even if you do buy the headship thing, the kind of power being used here isn't at all power over.
Yeah.
Now, implications of this little rule part in Genesis. All right, just a couple of things and then we'll call it an episode. Number one, and this, I mean, this is obvious, although it wasn't obvious to me early in my Christian life, but like environmental stewardship is actually a way that we bear the image of God. Mm-hmm. And so litter becomes an issue, a spiritual issue. Herding animals becomes an issue. Caring about things like global warming becomes an issue. And again, these aren't, I mean, if people hear this politically, that just goes to show how much we've been discipled by our politics. But you can't read Genesis 1 and hear rule and subdue and think in any way, shape, or form that means strip mine or pillage or, hey, it's all going to burn, so let's use it up before we go.
Yeah,
that's not the biblical story. The earth is renewed. It's not scratched and redone. It's like it's renewed. There are things on the earth that will carry forward in new creation. And so I just want to take a moment in Genesis 1. And I know for a lot of us, this is no duh. This is one of the ways culture has really led the church into its goodness.
Even if it's a no-duh, this is stuff that I'll speak for myself. I need to be reminded on continually because my where I grew up or how I've understood the world or how the world has been told to me to be understood is built in a power over structure.
Totally.
Even if it's not overt.
Right.
It's all those things. So.
But there's something in us when like there's an oil rig spill and we're seeing animals wash up on shore. There's something in us that's an image bearing thing that says that's not okay. That's not okay. That's the reason when people beat their dogs, mm-hmm. like there's something in us that goes, no, that's really wrong. Or, you know, we find out a serial killer started by torturing animals. It's like, no, 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 there's something here. Mm-hmm. And it's sad to me that it's become politicized so that, you know, we're not open just to the plain meaning of the text, which is, hey, what it means to image God well is to really take care of this. And to use it for, like, creation itself is to flourish under the rulership of the humans.
Yeah.
Because we're supposed to be cooperating with it. Mm-hmm. It's like we're supposed to go with the grain of creation towards fruitfulness and flourishing rather than against the grain of creation where we're, you know, subjecting it to all sorts of exploitation for our
own. And it does it for us in its own weird way. This will sound dumb, but like, just cleaning the air and giving us oxygen. Or I saw something yesterday. It was like, just like when you feel like the world is out of control, go sit on a rock and look at a river.
Yeah.
And just like, it feeds your soul. It feeds you back.
There's something there.
Like, that's why my therapist is always like, get outside. Or that's why I love that. Is it Patagonia or REI or one of them? It's like, instead of doing the cyber or the Black Friday or whatever, the big shopping days, they're like, we're shutting down these days. Go outside.
I love that. That's it. That's exactly it. There's something soulful about that. And that's why, you know, you can go to Las Vegas, but then go stand at the Grand Canyon and tell me.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean? Like there's just, and so we, and our churches need to foster that way of thinking that are scientists saying, listen, there are, and because anytime there's an environmental issue, we will always affect the most vulnerable among us.
100%.
Always. And I just think this is a Christian thing. This is not a political thing.
Yeah, that's reason alone. We were just talking about that in the classroom with like Hurricane Katrina and how a lot of that area exists below sea level. And that's why they have the levees. But when these hurricanes come, it floods like a bowl. And then a lot of us on the coast are like, well, why don't those people just move? It's like, because they can't. They can't afford it. Like it does... climate and this stuff does affect the least of these more than it affects those of us who are living really well somewhere.
Absolutely. So
that alone, that point alone for why we should be paying attention amongst many, but just that one alone is reason enough to pay attention and be, how can I rectify this so that my neighbors are not drowning?
Yep. Yeah. So to be fully human is to carry this out to
fill
and rule and subdue in ways that go with the grain of creation. And the grain of creation is about the flourishing of other humans. And it's the flourishing of creation itself to the glory of God, to acknowledge, to sit and acknowledge how incredible the mind of God must be to have created self-sustaining systems that clean the air and water the ground. And you know what I mean? And so when species go extinct, that's something to mourn. That's that's not a point of pride. And I know, and I know most of our listeners, the vast majority of our listeners are already like, absolutely. But this has just been hijacked by politics and it's a really profound theological point.
Yeah, I think you're giving a theological framework for people that may have already felt this way. But don't have the theological framework to put it together in a way that it's like,
this
is what this is.
And that's why when we read about a new heavens and new earth, and the word new there isn't the word for brand new, but it's the word for renew.
Man, our language is so limited.
It really is. It really is.
That's a third or fourth word just in this podcast that you've said like, well, it means this here, but it means this here, but it's the same word in English.
I know. And it's true of every language, right? Every language has its own drawbacks, no question. The last thing I just want to draw attention to is something we drew attention to before, and it's just the idea that through naming all humans images of God, we've taken a phrase that was applied to kings and statues and temples and applied them to all of humanity equally. And again, and we get this question a lot. It's okay. The author of Genesis or the community that wrote Genesis, however you see it, is riffing on archetypes and symbols and common stories of the ancient Near East. But the thing that jumps out at you is how different the stories, you know, they'll just be something that turns. It's like, well, image of God. Yeah, that's a standard trope that meant idol statue applied to a king or applied to a god. But to say male and female, humanity itself is made in the image, is to take rulership and power that belonged only to kings and gods, and to now say it's the province of every human being ever.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like, again, sticks of dynamite in the ancient world that just still reverberate. You know what I mean? So, and to me, every other form of ethic, you know, form of ethics comes from that, this simple, this like this three verse, let us make humanity in our own image and our likeness. Let them rule. That everything else, it's called theological anthropology. Everything else comes from that.
Yeah.
So maybe what it means to be human. There. Perhaps. So we're going to spend a little more time next episode on power over versus power with.
Okay.
Because Jesus, like we've got, so the thing that we're, like most of us hate about what's happening in our world is that we see Christians arguing that we can use power over for good means. Yes. And the argument Fitch and others and that we'll be making is you can't. Power over has a very limited function in God's good world, and that is only to preserve life. So stoplights and traffic tickets preserve life, but they don't redeem. They don't love. They can't forgive. They can't reconcile. Like power, so the greatest tragedy, and I've fallen prey to this, is when Christians believe that power over, that good people using power over is the way to bring about God's plan for the earth.
Yes.
That is the greatest tragedy when it comes to ruling. And so what Fitch and others are going to argue is that we have to eschew power over entirely and not ever succumb to the idea that if we just had better people in places where power over was exercised, the world would be better. Because right. We've tried that and it's not happened. It's the nature of power over that's the issue. It's not, man, these pastors are all narcissists. Well, that could be true. Or the pastoral cultures foster narcissism. That could be true. But it's also because we've embraced a non-human form of power.
Yep.
We were never meant to be like hierarchied above each other.
No,
there's something dehumanizing about that.
We see that throughout all of history. Okay, can I ask two questions that are on this?
Yes.
One.
Always.
Is Jesus the example of power with and not power over with how he came and did what he did?
Just wait. Just wait.
And then, so when you're talking about creation and kind of acknowledging God's work and vastness and giving God glory and this kind of stuff, I started thinking about the conversations that we've had about worship and about how God's not necessarily sitting there being like, hey, praise me, praise me, praise me, but is looking for this more like participatory thing that helps edify and rebuild people. Is this somewhat similar to that as well, where it's like the way in which you worship God is by stewarding, is by ruling in this way?
See, here's the path, right? To be human means to live a life congruent with the purposes of and character of God in the world. That mode of entire living is called worship, and it leads to life. When we live a life that's not congruent with the purposes of character of God in the world, that whole mode of life is called idolatry, and it leads to death. And so absolutely, this has nothing to do with being religious. This is your mode of life is either, and this is where we even misunderstand what glory is.
Right.
God is glorified when his gifts are enjoyed. It's not, hey guys, I have to acknowledge that I'm a worm and God that you're great, as if he's some cosmic narcissist. Not at all. That's not what giving God glory is.
Yeah.
Giving God glory is when human beings function well in the world and image the character and goodness of God into the world so that the world and other people benefit. That's the glory of God.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I encompasses trying to provoke. You got it. Well done. Provoker.
I do think we have a very distorted, obviously, of so many things. But when you said that, I was like, I think people hear glory and then they're trying to figure out how do I give glory to God?
Yeah, we've only been given
a few ways that we understand how to do that. And no, this is speaking to something else.
That's it. Me living in full humanity is the glory of God.
Yeah.
And now again, you can hear that as very humanistic. Like, oh yeah, yeah, I'm just enjoying what I'm enjoying and doing my thing. And that's no. It's the harmony, the shalom between God, image, and creation. That whole synergy, when it's aligned and beautiful, that is the glory of God.
Yeah, symmetry, that's a good word for that. Because the other version that they were mentioning is like the eat, drink, be merry, like just kind of indulge yourself, you know, and be as happy and joyful as you can. But that's in itself destructive and can be a power over in a few different ways. So it's very different.
So this is where Fitch does some really great work, because he talks about how all of the subtle ways that Christians use power over and think it's okay because we're using it for Jesus.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So gross.
Yep. So anyway, there'll be a lot there.
Love it.
Great job.
Good stuff.
Ladies and gentlemen. Yep. We got a conference coming up. We're so excited about that. For those of you who support us on Patreon and Tidely, thank you. You make stuff like this possible.
Literally.
We have 18 folks coming from 60s to 20s, from all over the country, and we could not be more excited about it. And so just thank you for your support. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for giving us the great privilege of being a small part of your life. Thank you for your emails and your encouragement. It's just all wonderful.
The emails are really important, and I don't want people to be discouraged that there's no way we can reply to every one of them, but I'm pretty sure every one of them is read and thought over. Yeah. And
yep, that's true. That's true. That's true. I don't know. I've never, I don't know how to live well with email.
But I love it. We get the most random thought-provoking questions in there, and they're wonderful. I love it. I love picturing people pulling their car over or like trying to hold on to some question while they're driving that they need to type
out
later.
These doofuses, I cannot believe. Totally. Anyway, love you all. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, thank you, thank you for listening to this conversation. The Voxology Podcast is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that is made possible by listeners just like you. If you'd like to partner with us, you can do so at patreon.com/voxologypodcast or on Tithely, tithe.ly, search Voxology Podcast. You can interact with the hosts on Facebook/voxologypodcast. Or on Instagram @VoxologyPodcast and on Twitter or X, whatever it is, @MikeErie. Thank you, thank you, thank you for walking this long road with us.